Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Bob McCoy. I'm Leanne Dofino. We have four cases set for oral submission this afternoon. Fortunately, we will recess in between so people can get out of here without having to listen to all four, unless you just want to listen to all four. I understand that both sides are ready for the first argument. Is that correct? All right, then if you'll call the first case, we'll get started. All right, you ready?
Good afternoon. May it please the court and opposing counsel. We are here today to discuss and hopefully make clear some muddy waters with regard to the interplay between a disqualification under a federal law for possessing or purchasing a firearm and a state law which allows an individual to be licensed to carry a concealed handgun under Government Code 411-172A9. This case stems from the department's action denying a concealed handgun license renewal to the appellee on the basis that she was deemed to be not qualified under federal law, specifically 18 U.S.C. 922G4, an adjudicated mental defective or somebody who was determined to be not capable of managing their own affairs. The issue before the court, as we see it, as the department sees it, is that the trial court erred by finding that the doctor's letter, which was sufficient to make appellee qualified under federal law, 18 U.S.C. 922G4, and therefore eligible under Government Code 411-172A1-14. Under the federal law, the Gun Control Act of 1968, individuals who had been committed to a mental institution or those that had been found not competent to manage their own affairs were found to be disqualified from purchasing or possessing a firearm. There are 10 qualifications that an individual must meet, and it's a meet all or not meet any. It's an all-or-nothing statute, just like the concealed handgun licensing statute is an all-or-nothing statute. Following an adjudication, a commitment, the person was not able to go out and buy a gun. Shouldn't have been able to, but we didn't have access to all of those mental health records for those court commitments because of privacy concerns. Those records are segregated in the clerk's office. The federal government certainly didn't have any access to some of those state records, and those are going to be mostly state records unless they come into play under the VA, the Veterans Administration. They have some records associated with finding guardians for some of their veterans who need help in receiving their government funds. Until Public Law 110-180, 122 Stat 2559, entitled the Nix Improvements Act of 2007, people who had been committed by court order to a mental institution were permanently prohibited from possessing a firearm. And they were made permanently prohibited to possess a firearm because since 1993, the U.S. budget has not allowed the ATF to go out and obtain and grant reliefs of disabilities under the federal law.
And that's in the record.
And yes, ma'am, that's in the brief. That's in our brief.
Okay, because we're limited to the record.
Right, and it under the Concealed Handgun Licensing Act, whenever a person goes to apply, we run a criminal background check, we run some other checks on them, we run warrants on them, and we also run a query at the NICS database up at the FBI. That NICS database will tell us if somebody has been admitted into the denied persons file. The denied persons file is there for inclusion of individuals whose records cannot be put into an FBI rap sheet or the IIII, the Interstate Index. The Interstate Index, Individual Index. Mrs. The appellee's name came up as a denied person based upon that that commitment over in Howard County. We were able to see those records, or at least that record was able to be transmitted. Her commitment order was able to be transmitted to the FBI via a database link from the county clerks through the DPS and straight on up into FBI. We're just the pass through. We maintain it and we service the database, but they plug into our database and our database connects straight up to the FBI. When we found that, we sent a denial notice. She appealed. We went to the JP court for the hearing on our denial, on our action. And our action was based on one thing: she was not qualified under federal law to purchase or possess a firearm. We were not able to find out about this until such time as she sought a renewal, even though she had been committed during her previous term of her concealed handgun license. It had been after the license had been issued. But we do not run a query to NICS except for on initial application on each and on each subsequent renewal. That's just so that we can make sure that we have all of the information in and that the license is still maintained as fully qualified under the ATF as a NICS alternate permit. The department was successful at the JP court, and then the appellee filed a petition for trial de novo at the county court at law. The county court at law subsequently ruled in the affirmative for appellee and against the department's action denying that concealed handgun license. The court's ruling stated that the letter from the doctor upon her discharge and her current mental state was enough to make her federally qualified. That isn't so. There is a relief of disabilities that a person must go through, because whenever under 574.070, I believe it is, the rights afforded to an individual who has been committed to a mental institution, and I'll get that in just a second. I've got to find it in my notes. I've got it buried. I'm sorry, I misstated.
74088?
No, ma'am. That's the relief of disabilities that an individual who's been committed to a mental institution by court order should seek to obtain their rights back under federal law. They need to file a petition with that committing court, which in this county was Howard County and not Parker County, and go through the steps of that provision of 574088 seeking to obtain their federal firearms rights back. Under Section 576.001 of the Health and Safety Code, individuals who have been committed to a mental institution have certain rights under the Constitution and law. And it states that a person with a mental illness in this state has the rights, benefits, responsibilities, and privileges guaranteed by the Constitution and laws of the United States and this state. And that's subparagraph A. And then subparagraph B says, unless a specific law limits a right under a special procedure, a patient has the right to register and to vote. Even felons are allowed the right to vote whenever they get out of prison. That's a right that is passively given back to them whenever they get out of prison so that they are not disenfranchised under the Voting Rights Act. They have the right to acquire property. They have the right to sue and to be sued. They have all the rights relating to the grant and use and revocation of a license, permit, privilege, or benefit under law. They have the right to religious freedom, and they have all rights relating to domestic relationships.
That's the right of a felon, right?
That's the right of a person who's been committed to the mental institution.
Mental institution, okay.
And a specific, there are specific laws that limit the rights under subparagraph B4 of 576.001 that would limit the right of anybody who has been committed, such as appellee, to possess a firearm or to purchase a firearm. That's federal law 18 U.S.C. 922 G4 and the licensing statute under 411.172A9. Which says that they must meet all federal laws and federal and state laws in order to purchase or possess a firearm.
And basically, your whole complaint is that the order just came from the wrong court.
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right. There is an avenue, there is a remedy for her it's not that onerous a remedy. She can go back to the Howard County Court. She can file a petition with that court under 574.088, and they can find under 574, all the steps under 574, the court can make a positive finding that she is no longer disqualified.
Do you agree that if this particular order was entered by the Howard Court, that she would be entitled to have her handgun license renewed?
I would say no, I couldn't agree that on this and this particular issue that it couldn't, because we were there on an application for a concealed handgun license.
But regardless of why you were there, are the findings that were made by the court in this case, would they be adequate to entitle her to proceed with a renewal if they were made by the Howard Court?
I'm going to state that it's my belief that no, it would not be. Because it would need to come under that specific provision.
So it would have to cite the pertinent statute, and that's
yes, ma'am.
The only reason. The
yes.
findings that were made are satisfactory.
I would state that if it was in the proper county and the proper court, and it was filed under the proper statute, yes, they would be sufficient. But as far as sufficient to do that on the collateral issue of a concealed handgun license, I would say no, it's not.
Why?
I think that you can just make a...
If it's in the right court, in the right county, under the right statute, you just don't like the outcome because... I mean, the findings and conclusions wouldn't be adequate because?
Because it wouldn't be under the one approved statute that's an ATF-approved statute, a Department of Justice-approved statute for the relief of disabilities for firearms rights. And that one is under 574.088. It's not 411.172,
etc. I thought our given was that it was under the right statute in the right county, in the right court.
I'm sorry.
The findings and conclusions under those conditions be sufficient?
Yes, they would. Yes, they would. If it was under the correct statute, 574.088. Yes, ma'am. The reservation of rights under 576.001 can be overcome in a non-onerous way. That's going back to the Howard County and filing the appropriate petition. She files the appropriate petition and applies, or if she files the appropriate petition before this court rules, we would issue the license. But because of the way that the licensing statute is set up and because of the way that the relief of disabilities under federal law has been set up, we have to go with the order under 574.088. Now, if it was just a guardianship and she went back to the guardian court and was found to be competent to handle her own affairs, and then the guardian court came along later and said, and plus she can have her handgun license again, then we could go ahead and issue. There's a difference between the mental health commitments and the guardianships. The guardianships, there is no approved mechanism at this time, but if they have a termination of the guardianship and then they go and they apply to the court that terminated that guardianship, found that they were fully competent, and they applied for their firearms rights back, that would be enough to make them qualified under federal law for the concealed handgun licensing statute, unlike the mental health commitments that have a specific statute. Thank you.
Any questions? Questions? Thank you. Okay, Andrew.
May it please the court, Ms. O'Shaw. Mrs. Randolph's application for renewal of her concealed handgun license is stuck in a bureaucratic quagmire, not because Mrs. Randolph is unqualified under state or federal law, but because her name erroneously appears on the FBI National Registry, and the department mistakenly equates that with being disqualified under federal law. Moreover, the department is required to take action to effect removal of Mrs. Randolph's name from the registry, but has not done so. The department concedes that Mrs. Randolph is qualified under Texas law, but its argument that she fails to qualify under federal law is a tail wagging the dog, because the department wholly ignores the substance of the Brady Act as amended, just as it does in its briefing before this court. This morning, Mrs. Randolph filed a very short handout, and hopefully the court has that. And I want to call attention to just a couple of things about this at the outset. These statutes are very long, and what we've tried to do is really condense and bring into focus the part of this statute that the department completely ignores. The first section is section G4 that Ms. O'Shaw talked about. It's the section of the Brady Law that essentially prohibits a person from possessing or buying a firearm if they've been adjudicated a mental defective. But what the department completely ignores is the Brady Law Amendment, which is on the first page under tab A, highlighted here. And what it provides is if that a person has otherwise been fully released or discharged from all mandatory treatment under an adjudication, then the record of that adjudication may not be presented to the Attorney General, which the statute includes to define the FBI. And then over on the next page, the statute goes on to say up at the top in subsection 2 that in that situation, when it can't be reported to the FBI, as in the case of Mrs. Randolph, when they've been fully released from all treatment, then it's deemed as though that adjudication never occurred. So in this particular situation, it is undisputed that Mrs. Randolph was fully released and discharged from any mandatory treatment within about 2 weeks of the initial 2008 order from Howard County. Unknown at that time, she was suffering from an autoimmune problem, not a mental defect of any kind. That was easily fixed and corrected, and since then she has been completely released and discharged from any treatment. And so, therefore, the mandate against reporting that mental adjudication to the FBI equally applies to the states. That's on the second page of the handout, section 102. The federal law requires the states to maintain and update their records and keep them accurate. And so under the Brady Act, if the prior adjudication is precluded from being reported to the Attorney General, it's deemed not to have ever occurred at all, and Mrs. Randolph is clearly qualified under federal law, notwithstanding the fact that her name may appear on this registry erroneously. Now, there are essentially four reasons that really come to light as to why the department's argument is incorrect when you begin to look at these statutes and try to harmonize them and understand them. And I'm gonna list the four reasons, and then I wanna talk about each one a little bit. The first reason is that the department's argument completely nullifies the county court at law de novo jurisdiction that's set up under the concealed handgun statute, concealed handgun law statute. Secondly, their argument contradicts and renders meaningless portions of the Texas Firearm Reporting Statute, contradicts in the Texas Relief from Disability Statute on which they rely, and conflicts with federal law. Under the Texas statutory scheme, the county court at law is specifically authorized to conduct a de novo trial to determine whether an applicant meets the statutory requirements for a concealed handgun license. One of those requirements is whether a person is mentally competent to understand what a handgun is all about and competent to maintain it and use it and that sort of thing. This de novo trial is not merely a review of the record on which the department bases its decision, but it affords the applicant a brand new trial with new evidence that may be offered, and the county court at law is not bound at all by the department's decision. But under the department's reasoning, the county court at law is deprived of this authority that the statute expressly grants to it to make findings as to whether an applicant is no longer an incapacitated adult and otherwise eligible for a concealed handgun license or for renewal of a handgun license.
What about the argument that it's in the wrong county? What about the argument that it's in the wrong county?
Well, Your Honor, that argument, again, nullifies the de novo jurisdiction of the county court at law. All that's required is for the applicant to make application under the concealed handgun statute or renewal, as happened in this case, and then the statute prescribes the process for review of that. And again, because Mrs. Randolph was never disqualified under federal law, that is not an impediment to granting the concealed handgun license in this situation. The only reason they denied it was because her name popped up on a computer screen erroneously. So under the concealed handgun statute, she properly applied, she properly went through the steps, got the determination she needed, and the Howard County Court determination is a red herring. It's just not a prerequisite for her in this case to get her renewal. The department's argument also renders meaningless portions of the Texas Firearm Reporting Statute. Under the Firearm Reporting Statute, the department must notify the FBI to remove a mental adjudication record from the National Registry if a person provides a court order or finding that a party is no longer incapacitated from any court of competent jurisdiction, or a court order or finding that a party is relieved from disabilities under the Texas Relief from Disabilities Act.
So essentially it's an expunction.
Under the Relief from Disabilities Act, it might be deemed an expunction under that, but under the Texas Firearm Reporting Statute, a party may go through the normal process through the county court at law and obtain findings in that way as well to authorize it to obtain the license. So,
but there's a court order then to all the reporting agencies not to report it and not to keep the record, or do they keep the record but just don't report it?
Well, in this particular situation, obviously Mrs. Randolph has a court order. The department, we maintain that the federal law and the state law requires the department to notify the FBI to fix their records and correct their records, but they haven't done so in this case. So some of the statutes do require a court order. But in our argument, in our context, what we're saying is that Mrs. Randolph was qualified for renewal of her concealed handgun license. She didn't need an order to qualify under federal law, because the federal law itself says when you've been fully released and discharged, it's as if that order never existed. That's what the statute says. And so from a practical standpoint, it shows up on a computer screen, but from a substantive legal standpoint, it's wholly inappropriate for the department to deny that relief because she qualifies under federal law.
So your position is they're relying on an error to deny her her license or deny the renewal or oppose the renewal?
That's correct. They're relying on the erroneous assumption that she doesn't qualify under federal law simply because her name appeared on a computer screen.
So let me see if I can sum up what you're arguing. You're saying that she could either have gone down the what we call expunction route, gone to Howard County and get the, let's call it, commitment information expunged, or she could have gone to any appropriate county and including Parker County, and demonstrated that the information contained in the FBI listing of individuals that were not qualified was erroneous because they should have never gotten the information to start with. Hence, Howard County is immaterial.
And I think...
Is that what you're saying?
There's a lot of truth to that, Your Honor, but what we're really saying is that in this situation, she really didn't need an order at all to qualify under federal law. And that's the only basis...
What I'm saying is that you could have gone to Howard County and gotten what we call an expunction order, or you could have gone to another county and just demonstrated to the court that her name should never have been on that FBI list in the first place.
Well, I think that's accurate, certainly as it relates to the concealed handgun statute, in that it provides de novo review by a county court, appropriate county court at law. And my main issue there is simply our argument that she didn't really need an order to begin with under federal law. She qualifies under federal law whether she has an order or not, simply because the statute says if she's been fully released and discharged from treatment, that prior adjudication is deemed not to have ever existed.
So your position would be in similar circumstances, similar cases like this, where an individual has had a mental commitment and then subsequently applies for or renews a concealed handgun license, that at that point, if they are denied on that basis, because they would be denied unless they had followed the procedure of going to the court where the commitment order had issued from and obtaining relief that way, they're going to, when the information is going to be sent, right, but when there's a commitment order entered, that's going to go to the FBI, to the AG, to the reporting places, right?
Right.
So at that point then, the individual in this case and future cases, in when they appeal, because it's going to be denied the first time if there's no challenge, either the application or the renewal for the concealed handgun license is going to be denied because that commitment is going to pop up wherever it pops up. So then at that point, when they appeal the denial, the individual appeals the denial, your position is at that point, in the JP court or in the county court at law, it's a de novo review. And so at that point, they can prove the discharge from the commitment order and prove that they are not disqualified by federal law based on the discharge.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is absolutely correct.
And then at that point, once they do that, it's as if they were never committed and they are no longer disqualified under federal law, despite what the computer may say.
That's right. And the only twist would be is that we would say that they're not disqualified under federal law even before they get that order, because the federal statute that's in here and highlighted specifically provides that they've been discharged from treatment, then it's as if the order never existed.
Correct. I see your point, but as a practical matter, there's got to be some vehicle to get the discharge
right
brought to somebody's attention.
Right. And our point is simply that they do qualify, she does qualify under federal law as a matter of substance, and so therefore she was able to get that corrected or fixed in the county court at law.
So I guess the way to avoid what's happened here would be if a discharge order was sent with your renewal application or your concealed handgun application, then at that point a denial could not be based on lack of qualification under federal law.
I think that's right. I mean, I think that obviously they could still deny it and make the party go through the process of proving it up in the county court at law in a trial on the merits. But if they get the information, the federal statute and the state statutes, I think, say that the department should correct the records with the FBI. I see my time is almost up. I want to quickly address the collateral attack argument that they make in the reply brief. There's no collateral attack here. Under state law, this temporary commitment order terminated as a matter of law when Mrs. Randolph was discharged within about 2 weeks. So an early discharge from that temporary commitment order terminates that order as a matter of law. There's nothing to collaterally attack. And under federal law as well, as we've seen, when she was discharged, then as a matter of law, under federal law, she qualifies. So thank you. I'll be happy to respond to any other questions.
Thank you. Jean?
Excuse me. Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to just a few items that Mr. Sims brought up in his argument, with regard to our actions nullifying the court of criminal, the county court at law in Parker County, that's untrue. The county court at law in Parker County has the ability under that trial de novo to see, to make us prove that she has a disqualifying factor, whether it be this temporary order of commitment or whether it be a felony conviction, a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence, a protective order, dishonorably discharged from the military, any of those things under federal law, or any of the other 14 items under the Texas law. If the person applies for a concealed handgun license and has a pending felony or pending Class A or Class B misdemeanor or an offense under 4201 of the Penal Code, disorderly conduct, we will deny them. And we will go into, and if they request a hearing, we will go into the JP court and then subsequently the county court at law. Whoever is unhappy at the JP court can appeal under a trial de novo to the county court at law. And we would have to prove our case all over again. We would have to show the information that's out there or the indictment if it's a felony. We would have to show the discharge paperwork on somebody who was federally disqualified under dishonorably discharged from the military. In this case, we showed the court commitment order. Then when she was discharged after her time in treatment because she had reached maximum benefit and maximum therapeutic benefit for the hospitalization, that is akin to being discharged from your probation in a criminal case whenever you have come to the end of the term of that probation. She was removed at that point in time from the court's jurisdiction, but it did not automatically reinstate her gun law, her rights to possess a firearm or to purchase a firearm under federal law and then subsequently under state law for the concealed handgun licensing statute. She would need to seek a relief of that disability. A felon, whenever they get off of probation, if they serve out the entire, say they're put on 5 years probation, they serve out the entire 5 years. At the end of that probation, they are discharged. They have to be discharged unless a motion to revoke probation was filed.
Do you have any support for that position of the use of the word discharged? Because looking at the statute, it says that the person has otherwise been fully released or discharged from all mandatory treatment, supervision, or monitoring.
But under Texas law, there is a discharge under the Health and Safety Code.
But you're saying that she's not qualified under federal law, under this statute, because of this statute that I just read.
Right.
And so why would I not use that discharge
language? Because they look to, under the federal law looks to, and if they are basing a denial under federal law on the basis of some state action, then they are going to look for that definition under the state. And the state of Texas does define discharge under the Health and Safety Code. And discharge is just sending them home from the hospital.
So that trumps the discharge as it's used in the terms of the statute that you're relying on?
It's different. Yes, ma'am. It's the term, they are relying on the term discharged under the public law 110-180. They are relying on that term discharge based upon that doctor's saying you have reached maximum therapeutic benefit. We are not relying on that. We are saying that that discharge did not put her back to the status that she was prior to the hospitalization.
Whose burden of proof is that?
The burden of proof?
Who has the burden of proof?
With regard to the concealed handgun licensing statute, we do.
All right. So when the doctor says she's reached the maximum benefit, that can as well mean and she is totally healthy and there's absolutely no reason to keep her here. So if it means something else, you've got the burden to prove it means something else.
And that
you?
Burden of proof is that she was committed by a court order, and that is what stripped her of her rights under federal law, the court order. The doctor cannot override that court order. They are not above the court. just like a JP court is not above the county court at law, or the county court at law is not above you guys.
Well, when I remember doing commitments, after they were released with the medical report saying they're perfectly fine, go ahead and put them to trial and kill them, all the judge had to do was accept the report, make a finding on the record that they were had been cured and of mental retardation and could now be killed. And I didn't see the state complaining about that, saying that there was another burden of proof. It was the report from the doctor and the accepting by it by the court finding, making a finding on the record that the person was now competent based on the report from the hospital, from the doctor. And that was it.
But pursuant to the rights, the patient's rights under 576.01, there are different rights there. They can be, once they are found competent to stand trial in a criminal case, they can go and be adjudged guilty or not guilty based upon their conduct that, of that crime that they were alleged to have committed. I would hesitate to say that they would be allowed to execute anybody at this point in time based upon some Supreme Court rulings with regard to competency. It does not mean that they regain all competency. A person who goes to prison for a felony offense, for a burglary of a habitation, and they go to the pen for 10 years, when they get out, they receive certain rights back. They receive the right back to vote, because they are not going to be disenfranchised.
But you're confusing parole and probation.
No,
and
yes, but they're all in there together, because once you've lost that federal right.
And then the trial judge made a finding on the record here, made findings of fact, conclusions of law, based on the report from the doctor.
But it's the same. It would be the same as somebody being on probation for a misdemeanor offense out of the Tarrant County Criminal Court at law, going over to the court in Parker County and saying, I want to be off probation, and that court in Parker County saying, okay, I discharge you from your probation under Tarrant County, and I'm going to set aside your conviction, or just make it even a felony, which when we're talking about felony, that discharge is nothing more than just removing her from the jurisdiction of the court. For her to be admitted back to that hospital under a court order, it would have to be under a new application. This particular action, it stripped her of her gun rights, and she's never reclaimed them. You can lose those. Felon loses their gun rights unless they are pardoned for the offense by the appropriate governmental entity. In Texas, it's the governor.
So your complaint is procedural.
It's procedural, and this relief of disabilities is akin to a conviction set aside under 4212 Section 20, where they restore all their rights and it removes them from all penalties and disabilities associated with their conviction. She has penalties and disabilities associated with her commitment. The relief of disabilities under 574.088 relieves her of all those penalties and disabilities. It would restore her. It would restore her federal gun rights. Right now, she doesn't have them, and I realize that I'm just repeating the same thing. But federal law is very specific with regard to that, and they are not saying that that discharge from the hospital, the discharge order from the doctor, can override that court order that put her in the hospital and then grant her federal gun rights back. She does need to seek her rights back through the appropriate mechanism. It's very specific. 574.088 is the relief of disabilities for mental health cases. She's got a mental health case. She doesn't have a guardianship case. She doesn't have a felony conviction. It's apples to apples, oranges to oranges. The apple in this case is 574.088. Any other questions?
I got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We appreciate you coming in to argue. I don't think we've had very many cases like this before, so your argument was particularly helpful. And your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business, or if you want to stay and watch what we do next, you're certainly welcome to do that.